Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jaya mudirayat. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances under the personality of Godhead Lord Narayan, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. This morning we're reading from Canto 2, Chapter 7. Srimad Bhagavatam, text number 19. The verses on the board, kindly repeat this after me, line by line. Tubhyam cha narada brisham bhagavan vivriddha.
Tubhyam cha narada brisham bhagavan vivriddha.
Bhavena sadhu parituṣṭa uvacha yogam.
Bhavena sadhu parituṣṭa uvacha yogam.
Jnanam cha bhagavatam atma-sattva-deepam. Yadvasudeva sharana vidur anjasaiva.
Yadvasudeva sharana vidur anjasaiva.
Tubhyam cha narada brisham bhagavan vivriddha.
Tubhyam cha narada brisham bhagavan
vivriddha. Bhavena sadhu parituṣṭa uvacha yogam. Jnanam cha bhagavatam atma sattva. Jnanam cha bhagavatam atma sattva deepam.
Jnanam cha bhagavatam atma sattva deepam.
Tadvasudeva sharana vidur anjasaiva.
Tadvasudeva sharana vidur anjasaiva.
Tubhyam.
Tubhye.
Cha.
Take.
Narada.
Narada.
Prisham. Bhagavan, Vibhridha, Bhavena, Sadhu, Parituṣṭa, Uvacha, Yogam, Jnanam, cha, Bhagavatam, Atma, Satatva, Deepam, Yat, Vasudeva Sharana.
Vasudeva Sharana.
Ti, kteří jsou dušemi podestanými pánu Vasudevu.
Vidu.
Yes.
Anjasa.
Anjasa.
Dokonale
dobře.
Eva.
Tak jak to je. O národu, byl si poučen o vědě, o Bohu a o jeho transcendentální lásky plné službě. Osobnosti božství, jeho inkarnaci Hamsavatara. Byl s tebou velice potěšen díky velice intenzivní úrovni tvé oddané služby. Také ti výstižně vysvětlil plnou víru oddané služby, kterou zvláště chápou osoby, které jsou dušemi odevzdanými pánu Vasudevovi osobnosti božství. Oddaní. Oddaný a oddaná služba jsou dva vzájemně propojené pojmy. Dokud se někdo nemá touhu stát oddaným pána, nemůže vstoupit do spletitosti oddané služby. Pán Sri Krishna chtěl vysvětlit Bhagavad Gitu, která je vědou o oddané službě Sri Arjunovi, protože Arjuna byl nejen jeho přítelem, ale také velkým oddaným. Celý proces je takový, že všechny živé bytosti, které jsou přirozeně nedílnými součástmi svrchované živé bytosti absolutní osobnosti božství, mají úměrně tomu nepatrnou nezávislost v jednání. Takže předběžnou kvalifikací pro vstup do oddané služby pána je, že se musíme stát ochotným spolupracovníkem a dobrovolně spolupracovat s osobami, které jsou zaměstnány v transcendentální oddané služby pána. Spolupráci s takovými osobami se budoucí uchazeč postupně naučí techniky oddané služby a s pokrokem pokrokem v tomto učení se stává uměrně tomu osvobozený od znečištění hmotnou společností. Takový očistný proces ustanoví v budoucím kandidátovi pevnou víru a postupně ho povýší na úroveň transcendentální chuti pro takovou podanou službu. Tak získává ryzí připoutanost pro dané služby pánovi a jeho přesvědčení ho přináší na úroveň extáze, která přímo předchází úrovni transcendentální lásky. Takové toto poznání o dané službě lze rozdělit do dvou oddílů, a to je předběžné poznání o povaze o dané služby, a potom druhotné poznání o jejím vykonávání. Bhagavatam se pojí s osobností božství, s pánem jeho krásou, slávou, bohatstvím, přitažlivostí a transcendentálními vlastnostmi, které k němu přitahují a způsobují, že touhu vyměňovat si s ním lásku a náklonost. Živá bytost má přirozenou zálibu pro oddanou láskyplnou službu pánovi. A tato záliba je jenom uměle zakrytá vlivem hmotné společnosti a Srimad Bhagavatam nám pomáhá velice rizným způsobem odstranit tento umělý obal. Proto se zde zvláště uvádí, že Srimad Bhagavatam působí jako lampa transcendentálního poznání. Tyto dva oddíly transcendentálního poznání v odané službě se zjeví osobě, která je duší odevzdanou pánu Vasudevovi, jak je řečeno v Bhagavad Gita 7.19. Takové velké duše plně odevzdané lotosovým nohám Vasudevi jsou velice vzácné.
Tubhyam ca Narada Brisham Bhagavan Vribhita Bhavena Sadhu Parituṣṭa Uvacca Yogam Jnanam Ca Bhagavatam Atma Sattatva Deepam Yad Vasudeva Sharana Vidur Anja Saiva. Read the translation again.
O Narada, byl si poučen o vědě o Bohu a jeho transcendentální lásky plné služby, osobnosti božství, jeho inkarnací Hamsa Avatara. Byl jste mou velice potěšen díky intenzivní úrovni té dané služby. A také ti výstižně vysvětlil plnou vědu o dané služby, kterou zvláště chápou osoby, které jsou dušemi odevzdanými pánu Vasudevovi osobnosti božství.
Mukam karoti bachalam bangam langayate grim yat kripatanam bande shri grundina tarinam. So hamsa means swan.
Hamsa znamená labut.
So the Lord Krishna, he sometimes appears as the hamsa avatar, the swan incarnation. This incarnation is called Naimittika. Naimittika means either, as two meanings. So either it means that this form of the Lord is temporarily manifest, it is not eternal. Or Naimittika means you don't find very much information about this form in the Shastra. Mm-hmm. So, some of the appearances of the Lord in this world are nitya. They are revelations of eternal forms of Godhead, which are existing always in the spiritual world. For instance, Lord Krishna, of course, he is the original Adi Purusha, original form of Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is nitya manifestation. Lord Narasimhadev also. But others like Hamsavatar or Mohini Murti or the Buddha, these are Naimittika. So, Anyway, Hamsa avatar, his appearance is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 11th canto. And from his instructions, there is one Upanishad, Hamsa Upanishad. Mm-hmm. So, Lord Brahma, who is actually speaking this verse to Narada, he's also called Hamsa. Because he's the first of the Paramahamsas. Paramahamsa means saintly transcendentalist. Mm-hmm. So Paramahamsa is a personality who has a quality which is called Sarabritam. Means he can extract the essence. The example is of a swan. A swan, if you feed the swan a bowl of milk that has been mixed with water, the swan knows how to drink that mixture in such a way that he extracts all the milk but just leaves the water. So similarly, this material world is a combination of two energies, matter and spirit. So one who is Hamsa or Paramahamsa, he dwells in this world, but he is always situated in spirit. He is not overcome by material consciousness. Although his senses are engaged here in various activities, as we were reading last night in Bhagavad Gita. But everything such a soul does is for Krishna only. So therefore his activities are spiritual. This is something that is very difficult for non-devotees to understand. Because they have the concept of spirit as being something beyond our perception. If something is spiritual, to most people, if you use that word spiritual, it immediately means to them something mysterious. You can't see it. You can't experience with our normal senses. But a Hamsa is one who is engaged seemingly in so many material affairs. His senses are at work in this world. He's walking, he's talking, he's speaking. He may also be collecting Lakshmi, distributing books, doing so many things. Like Srila Prabhupada used to say, I am giving Bhagavatam class, Srimad Bhagavatam class, and then afterwards, I am looking over my bank accounts. But all of this, either Bhagavatam class or going to the bank, this is only for Krishna. So therefore there's no karma, no material reaction. So it is spiritual. So, and finally, the spirit soul himself is also called Hamsa. Hamsa Hamsena Pratibodhita. It is stated in the Shastra that within the lake of the heart, there are two swans. So we could understand immediately that one of these swans must be the personality of Godhead, Lord Paramatma, Super Soul. The other swan is the jiva. And they're both called swan because a swan is white, and white is the color of purity. White means sattva, sattva guna, the mode of goodness. But of the two swans, one is in superior position, the other is subordinate. So the subordinate swan, it is seen that sometimes he's deviating from following the superior swan. And by deviating, he develops the qualities of another kind of bird. That bird called in Sanskrit kaka, which is the same, the sound it makes, crow. So originally the human beings on this earth planet, they were also called Hamsa, because they were all situated in their consciousness of, I am spirit soul, I am not the body. The Hamsa consciousness. In the mode of goodness. So in the Satyayuga, Satyayuga, there was no Varnashram Dharma. There was no Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Everyone was called Hamsa. Because everyone was situated in transcendence. So there was no need of this caste system, social divisions. There was no need of government, no need of laws, because people were situated in their original consciousness of, I am spirit soul, I am servant of Krishna. So it's just like, you can have an idea of what this is like when you observe little children. When little children gather together somewhere to play, there is also no concern for class distinction. You see, little children, by their own nature, they're not concerned who comes from a rich family, who comes from a poor family. They're not even concerned about the color of skin, that this child is black, this child is white. They're not concerned about, this child is boy, this child is girl. They simply, without any reservation, they play and they're happy together. Now it is seen, later on, everything changes. When they get a little older, and then suddenly all these conceptions manifest in the mind. Now, I can't associate with you because you come from a low-class family. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, whatever reason. Anyway, these social divisions appear. Mm-hmm. And this is all arising from one thing, which is very easy to understand, because what happens to children when they get older? That's when they get older, they start to feel sex desire. Before there is the appearance of sex desire in the consciousness, then the children are, they're innocent. Mm-hmm. But they become subject to sex desire in time, because although they're innocent, they're also foolish. Mm-hmm. So one who is a hamsa, he's innocent. He or she is innocent. But they're not foolish. Mm-hmm. Hamsa is called manasi. Manasi means very, very thoughtful, philosopher. Manasi sattva pradane. That their thoughts are grounded, are situated in the mode of goodness. They're always thinking very high thoughts, like Prabhupada said, used to say, simple living, high thinking. So, manasi vartmane hamsa, one who is very thoughtful, who's, that means always thinking of the Supreme Lord and how to serve Him, then he is following the way of the Hamsas. Mm-hmm. So he never, Narada Muni explains in first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about the difference between the swans and the crows. So, tadvayasam tirtham. The crows, they have their tirtha. Tirtha, as you know, means place of pilgrimage. There's an expression in English, birds of a feather flock together. You know this? Uh-huh. So, crows, because they have black feathers, they flock together. And where do they flock together? You can see this, you really can see this in India, in Calcutta, where there's so many crows. Why are there so many crows? Because there's so much garbage. Calcutta is a city filled with garbage. So crows, they congregate. They all descend out of the sky onto Calcutta. And one will hardly ever see a swan there. So, tad vayasi tirtha, the vayasam means crows. The crows all gather together in one place, and usanti manasa, on the other side, those who are manasa, those who are thoughtful, they will never, nayatra, they will never take that pilgrimage, nayatra hamsa, because they are swans. Because they get pleasure from somewhere else. Niramanti ushikshaya. Their pleasure comes from the spiritual world. Mm-hmm. So, now what does it mean to become like a crow? What is that pilgrimage? What is that nasty place where all the crows like to gather? So, this is explained by Sridhar Swami, who is the first commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam. Kakatulyanam kamayatistanam. That one who is like kaka, crow. And then his place of pleasure, kamastanam. Kamasanam means sex life, or actually means the sex organs. So this is what happens to, you know, to children when they grow up. They're in one sense when they're young, in one sense only, they're like hamsa, swans, because they're innocent. Of course, they're also foolish, so they're not exactly like swans either. But anyway, being innocent, they're happy, jolly, playing together, like we said, without very much enviousness. They have no interest in hard work, going to factory. children, they want the world to be bright and natural and beautiful. But they reach a certain age. 11, 12, 13, like that. And then the crows start to fly. Fly into their head. So they become interested in sex life. Then the consciousness changes. So Srila Prabhupada called this civilization Black Crow Civilization. Because the interest in sex is becoming so predominant. People are thinking today that this is the only source of pleasure. So, therefore, by focusing on sex, the sexual organs, as being the source of pleasure, then the whole consciousness, the whole civilization changes. It becomes very nasty. Becomes very degraded. Human being becomes like barbarian, like animal, beast. So, in Narada Muni's explanation of difference between crow and swan, he's speaking particularly of their taste in literatures. Those who are swan-like, who are hamsas, they hear repeatedly the glories of the Supreme Lord from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is their attraction. when there is discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, those who are swan-like, they will flock there. And those who have crow mentality, they're not interested. Ah, they think, oh, what are these strange stories? We want to hear something real, something tasty. So they're attracted to all sorts of mundane literatures. From newspapers, magazines, to novels, to books of mundane philosophy. But all of these sorts of literatures or discussions, whatever they may be, the foundation is sex. And of course, this is becoming more and more obvious as Kali Yuga goes on. You see, people are becoming less shy about this fact that sex is at the root of all material activities. So, everywhere one is being confronted with this blatantly sexual literature in the form of blatantly means very obvious, very, you know, outspoken. This blatant, sex literature in the form of pornography and so many things like that. So this is a clear distinction. If you want to know what is a clear distinction between a hamsa, one who is who is refined, who is advanced in spiritual consciousness, and one who is like a crow, is in taste of literature. So, this Srimad Bhagavatam, this book, is meant to help us develop that swan-like taste. Therefore, as we were saying last night, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. One should regularly attend the Bhagavatam class, regularly absorb one's mind in this message. Even someone asked the question, well, there are verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam which describe generations of kings. That this king married this other king's daughter, and then they had 10 sons and 3 daughters, and then they got married and they had so many sons. You know, and you'll see there's some sections of Bhagavatam where there'll be many, many verses like this in a row. So this devotee was asking, what is the value of these verses? Because there's nothing about Krishna in them, there's no philosophy in them. So I answered, I said, no, but you have to consider who has spoken these verses. The verses in question. We were in Poland, in the Polish farm, New Shantipur. We were reading such a section of Bhagavatam. And I said, these verses are spoken by Suta Goswami, who is a great Paramahansa. So if we read even these verses, we are associating with Suta Goswami. There are two ways of associating with a saintly person. Vapuseva, you are personally associating with him. Vapu means his physical form. And then there's Vani Seva, associating with him through his instructions or through his words. And of the two, the Vani Seva is most important because that is eternal. The words of great devotees, great personalities are eternal. Yeah? They are recorded within the eternal shastras like Srimad Bhagavatam. And their words have great potency. By hearing them, you associate with that person. And when you associate with someone, you, by that association, you take on his qualities. So if you associate with Paramahansa, then you also become Hamsa. Even if he's just speaking of something that seems to be very ordinary. But nonetheless, one gets infinite benefit from even a moment's association with such a great soul. Just like Srila Prabhupada, when Prabhupada when he'd go on morning walk or when associating with his disciples, he would sometimes speak of seemingly very ordinary things. There was one conversation which is very nice. Srila Prabhupada, it was in Mayapur, and Srila Prabhupada was talking of of the beauty of the women of Bengal. So Srila Prabhupada was saying, because the Bengalis, Bengali girls have such nice hair, nice black hair, he said, therefore, they were considered even by Englishmen to be very, very beautiful. And many Englishmen would want to marry the Bengali girls. Now, if you were just to print out Prabhupada's words in this connection, just read them, you might think, well, this is all mundane. What does this have to do with Krishna? Prabhupada is talking about Bengali women and how beautiful they are. But no, all the devotees, they were simply enwrapped in ecstasy. They're not becoming agitated or lusty thinking about Bengali girls. They're associating with Prabhupada. And even one devotee, when Prabhupada was saying this, that the Bengali girls, they have such fine here. And one devotee spoke up, almost as if to correct Srila Prabhupada. He said, Krishna has fine hair too. And Prabhupada laughed and he said, why you bring in Krishna? We're talking about Bengali girls. And then Prabhupada, he appreciated. He said, yes, actually, this is a fact that all beauty originates from Krishna. So this is the thing. When a saintly person, when a Paramahansa, he may speak about anything, but ultimately, the connection to Krishna will be established. So you see, the Srimad Bhagavatam is simply full of the narrations of Paramahansas. Either Hamsa in the sense of the personality of Godhead himself, or Hamsa in the sense of great devotees like Lord Brahma and Narada Muni. So by hearing the narrations of Srimad Bhagavatam, then we will also, as it says, Niramanti Ukshikshaya, we will also learn to take pleasure in the spiritual world. This all comes from association. When one associates with a pure devotee, then he's deriving pleasure from that association. That is spiritual pleasure. So just imagine, we can associate. We are so fortunate by reading this Bhagavatam. Right now, we're associating in these verses with Lord Brahma and Narada Muni. And you can select another volume and you can associate with Lord Shiva or Sage Kapila or Lord Nrisimhadev and Prahlad Maharaj. And in the 10th canto, you can associate with Sri Krishna and all the residents of Vrindavan. So we have to learn to develop a taste for this. And that means Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. One has to keep on hearing. There may be no taste in the beginning because we are like crows, like kaka. So, but one has to keep on hearing, keep on reading and studying. And we have to take it to heart. That means you have to apply your own mind to this. As Narottam Das Thakur says, Sadhu Shastra Guru Vakya Chitti Te Koriya Aikya. The words that are emanating from Sadhu, the pure devotees, from Shastra, from the scriptures, and from Guru, Vakya, these words, chitete koriya aikya, means you have to take them to your heart. You have to treasure them in your heart. You have to learn this. Don't leave it up to chance. You know, don't think that in some general way through the ether, without you paying attention, that you're going to develop this taste.
svým způsobem skrz éter, aby byste tomu věnovali pozornost, protože tuto chuť vyvíje.
You know, don't leave it up to others. Sometimes we think like this, that, well, other devotees, they'll get into it. They'll start to advance in Krishna consciousness. And later on, I'll also advance in their company. No. You also have eyes. You also have the ability to read, to hear, to understand. So you should apply your intelligence personally, directly, to understand and to appreciate this message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because in this way, you will get association with the saintly Paramahansas. And you will personally absorb their transcendental qualities. So each of us has to personally dedicate ourselves to read, to learn, to quote, and to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. This distribution, this is the final seva, the final service. That if we are convinced that it is so nice, then naturally we want to give it to others. This actually should be the motivation of the book distributor. Activity of book distribution should take place from that position of higher taste, transcendental taste. So when we are situated in transcendence, like Hamsa, you see, like swan, extracting the essence of existence, the spirit, then Maya cannot touch us. But we should always be aware that Maya she's constantly endeavoring to touch us. She's always trying. So one has to be very attentive in this connection. Maya has unlimited ways and means to agitate this lower taste, this taste for material sense gratification within our hearts. We may, you see, externally, someone may appear to be very peaceful and self-controlled. But if there is anything lying, even as seed in the heart, any taste for sense gratification, Maya is very expert to drag it out. This is Maya's business. It's like there's this story of one lady, high class lady from India. So she was very famous in her community as being very peaceful and self-controlled and gentle and humble. Everyone used to talk about her. She's such a nice, gentle woman. But she hired one serving girl. And this serving girl was a kind of a rascal. So although the lady of the house, she was very perfect in her behavior towards this serving girl. This serving girl was thinking, just out of maliciousness, you know this word? Out of maliciousness, out of small-mindedness. No, it means something like bad-mindedness. To be malicious means that even though there's no cause for you to become envious, still you're envious. So this serving girl, although this lady was very nice in her dealings with her, this serving girl became envious of her and wanted to drag her down. So the serving girl was thinking that this lady, she seems so nice and everybody is always praising her for her good qualities. But I'm sure that I can bring out her bad side. So one morning, the serving girl, on purpose, she slept late. So many services that she was supposed to do in the house, they were not done. So when the lady saw her, she asked very nicely. She said, "Oh, why did you sleep so late in the morning?" And then the serving girl said, "Huh, for no reason at all. I just felt like it." So then the lady, hearing this, she frowned. You know, frown when you make this. When you become disturbed, when you become angry, then these lines appear here. It's called a frown in English. It's a sign on the face that one is disturbed. So when the serving girl thought this, she said, "Ah, just see." Although everyone thinks she's such a nice, peaceful lady, now I see she actually has an angry side. So then the next morning, the serving girl, she even slept later. And then when she got up, the lady said, "Now, why did you sleep so late this morning?" And she said, "I felt like it. There was no reason." Then the lady, she said, "Well, you worthless, useless serving girl. So then the serving girl, she became even more happy. Ah, now she's even talking badly of me. So then the next morning, she even slept later. And the same thing happened. The lady asked her and she said, "Oh, for no reason." And then suddenly, this nice, gentle lady, she picked up a stick and she hit the girl on the head. She was beating her again and again. And so the serving girl, she ran out onto the street and she was shouting, "Oh, look at this woman. She's so angry. Everyone thinks she's so nice, but she's beating me on the head." And so all the neighbors were looking out. "Oh, what's going on?" So after that day, then this nice lady, her whole reputation was ruined. Everyone would say, oh, she's very angry. We saw her beating her servant on the street. So similarly, Maya, you see, Maya Devi, she has so many ways and means. If there is something in the heart that is low class, she has her various ways and means and tricks to bring it out on the street, in the public, where everyone can see it. Now for a devotee who is representing the Paramahansas in this world, this is very bad. Now, as I said, Hamsa means white. So Srila Prabhupada used to say, if you have a pure white piece of cloth, but in the middle is one black spot, then that looks very, very bad. Isn't it? Just like Prabhu here, he's wearing such nice white cloth. But if we were to see in the middle of it some big black ink spot, then we would think, oh, this looks very bad. Although it may just be one small spot, still on a white background, it stands out. Everybody immediately sees it. Oh, just see. So in this way, Maya attempts to ruin, to impede the spread of Krishna consciousness in this world. So we have to be very, very careful. So we should understand that finally each one of us individually are responsible for our own Krishna consciousness. If Maya pulls us down, you cannot blame anyone else. Each one of us, we have the opportunity to develop this higher transcendental taste by applying ourselves to associating with the great souls through their words in Srimad Bhagavatam. So we should take this very seriously. If we don't, then Maya will come into our association. She will sneak in somehow or other. And by associating with Maya, then the black spot will appear in our character. So, why risk creating such a big obstacle in our advancement? So let us take this opportunity to associate with the Hamsas or Paramahansas very seriously. So are there any questions?
Colors of incarnations for different yugas. If you can
say something about the incarnation with red color in Treta Yuga.
Yes, he is called Rakta Avatar. And he's reddish color. He appeared with four arms. And he taught Jagya, fire sacrifice, as the dharma of that age of Treta Yuga. And it is said that he destroyed many demons by his fire offerings. But again, this is Naimittika. There's very little description of the activities of the Rakta Avatar, at least as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. And also, they bring up this example where Prabhupada authorized the use of incense sales to boost the registration of Radha Damodara.
Mm-hmm.
It's also one of the incidents in Fiji where some devotees had a business and they were selling alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So they asked Prabhupada about this.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so.
You like to translate all that? Yes, so this point of consciousness, that it all depends on consciousness. That is true. It's like Lord Balaram, he's fond of drinking. So he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he likes to drink all. Shastra says this Varuni beverage, which is a kind of sap which runs from a tree. So in India, there is also a kind of wine which is made from the sap that runs out of a date palm tree. Now, this sap from the date palm tree, it runs out at night and gathered in a pot. So if you drink it before the sun comes up, then it's a very nice drink, very pukka, very tasty, and there's no reaction. But when the sun comes up, then immediately there's chemical reaction starts to happen in the date palm juice. Alcohol is formed. So if you drink this date palm ras, as the sun is coming up, then immediately it's considered you have fallen down. Even though the alcohol content, I mean, just as the sun is coming up, there I suppose there might be one or two molecules of alcohol in there at that time. But still, drinking it when the sun comes up, you're considered fallen. Of course, for Lord Balaram, such rules never apply. He can drink up all the alcohol in the world if he wants to, because he's the personality of Godhead. Mm-hmm. As I once heard a lecture by Hari Kesh Maharaj, and he gave a nice example. He said, Lord Balaram is Shankarshan, Anantashesha, Shankarshan also. So these are different forms of Balaram. So Anantashesha is holding the universes, and within the universe, he's also expanded in the universe, so on his heads are the planets. So he has universes and planets on his heads. So these universes, these planets, they're on his head. They appear like very, very tiny mustard seeds, or sometimes they're described as one little drop of water on his head. So you can imagine on the Earth planet how much alcohol there is. Or in this whole universe, how many intoxicating drinks there are. Now, but what difference would it make for Shankarshan, for Lord Anantashesh, if one of these universes became dislodged from the top of his head and rolled down and went into his mouth? See, then we could say that Lord Shankarshan has consumed all the intoxicating drinks available in one whole universe. But how would that change his consciousness? So if he incarnates here on earth, and say he comes to Prague and goes into every liquor shop, every bar in Prague, and drinks everything, drinks the whole city dry within a few minutes, how will this affect his consciousness? Because his consciousness is the origin. You see, as Shankarshan, he is called Tamasi. Tamasi means he is the origin of the mode of ignorance. And one of the aspects of the mode of ignorance is intoxication. So Lord Balaram is always appearing intoxicated by his own svarup. It is his own nature, svabhava. His eyes are always red and rolling. And he's walking unsteadily. This is his ecstatic situation. So from Shankarshan arises all forms of intoxicated consciousness. Mm-hmm. Now when the jiva tries to imitate, then he becomes conditioned by the tamoguna. You see, when ordinary human beings get intoxicated, they drink, then they get sick, they vomit, they feel terrible. But Lord Balaram, he can drink all the wine in a universe and still remain ever blissful. So, yes, this consideration of consciousness is there, but we should consider what is the level of our consciousness. You see? So are we, just because we are devotees, are we empowered to do as Lord Balaram is doing? If I give one of these philosophers, as you've mentioned, who says it all depends on consciousness, if I give them a bottle of vodka, say, now you drink this and let us see what happens to you. Are you so transcendental? Have you so much command over your consciousness that you can drink this bottle of vodka and not be affected by it? No, we are jivatma. We are very, very tiny particles of spiritual energy. And we are very, very strongly influenced by the material energy all around us. So, Sri Krishna has given us this path of devotional service. And he has specified that you engage your senses in particular sense objects and in this way serve me. Patram, pushpam, palam, toyam, Krishna says. You can engage your senses in offering leaf, fruit, flower, little water to me. Such activities are approved. And it's all there, it's all completely specified in Shastra. And in the words of spiritual master and the teachings of the sadhus, the saintly authorities. Water means water. It does not mean wine. You see, if somebody says, well, there's water in wine, so we can offer wine to Krishna and then take prasad. And we will just remember Lord Balaram. And everything will be all right. No, everything will not be all right. You will be in Maya. Because the material energy has no obligation to obey the command of your mental concoctions. Krishna says, Mama Maya. It is my Maya. It is not your Maya. It's not that you can pick up a glass of wine and say, ah, this is water, and then drink it. We have no such command over the material elements. When Krishna says patram, leaf, it means tulsi leaf, not marijuana leaf. So we have to follow these scriptural injunctions very strictly. And then our activities will be free of the influence of the material energy. So, Srila Prabhupada said, the acharya He is able because he is 100% surrendered to Krishna, and he is very eager to establish Krishna's mission in this world. So the acharya is empowered by Krishna to establish rules and regulations. Srila Prabhupada explains this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in a purport. That there are devotees who are empowered by Krishna to establish or make adjustments in the rules and regulations according to time, place, circumstance. These devotees are called acharyas. So we have our example, Srila Prabhupada himself. They make adjustments, but they do not violate the principle. For instance, Srila Prabhupada would often comment on this one point, that for spreading Krishna consciousness in the West, he opened the doors of the ISKCON temples to both men and women. Because in this culture, men and women, they mix more freely than in India. You see, it's not considered unnatural, it's not considered strange. For instance, just as a common example, on the buses that are going downtown, you see men and women, they're all, you know, sitting together, everyone mixed up. But in India, you see, the women sit on one side of the bus, the men on the other. If you're traveling by bus in Bengal and you don't know this, and you may see an empty seat, you see, it's on the woman's side, and you sit there, then immediately everyone on the bus will start talking very loud. Hey, what are you doing? Don't sit there. You see? So we don't think of these things in the West. So Srila Prabhupada opened the doors to the ISKCON temples. Men and women can come and live. But the principle is not violated. Still, no illicit sex. And then if someone questions that, how is it possible that men and women can live in such close proximity in one building, one temple, and not fall down? And the answer is that is due to the power of sadhana bhakti. If the Prabhus and the Matajis, if they're absorbed in hearing and chanting the holy name of the Lord and following the temple program, then they will not, their senses will not drag them into illicit activities. And Srila Prabhupada, you'll find in the scriptures that this is actually the real sign of one who has transcended material nature. That even though there is cause for agitation, in other words, The man can see the woman, woman can see the man. Still, within the heart, they're satisfied in spiritual life, so there's actually no attraction. So you see, by Srila Prabhupada establishing ISKCON temples as he did, he's actually advancing the mission of Krishna consciousness by proving to the world the power of the process.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, this this other way of trying to withdraw, trying to avoid any contact with the objects of the senses. This is like that story of the sage who is meditating at the bottom of the ocean. But he saw two fish having sex, and that agitated him. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this is the point. The acharya, he can adjust the regulations to fit time, place, and circumstance, but he never violates the principles. Mm-hmm. And Prabhupada warns, there are those who try to imitate the acharyas. They think that they're able to adjust, make adjustments in the regulative principles. But if they're not recognized by Krishna, right, if Krishna has not granted them the power to do this, then all of their adjustments, even the most insignificant ones seeming, their concoctions and they result in downfall. So one has to follow the path of the acharyas. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. So Srila Prabhupada may have given approval in Fiji. I know that gentleman, Vasudev Das. It's a very special situation. They still are, very, very successful business family. It's actually a business empire, this family, the Punja family. So their business was established, already in place. They were in a position, when they came to ISKCON, to make so much money for Srila Prabhupada's movement. So Srila Prabhupada said, yes, let them continue with their business as it is, but by putting Krishna at the center, they will become purified. This is the principle of Yukta Vairagya, that it's already there, the business, so engage it in Krishna's service. Mm-hmm. But if someone thinks, that means I can go out and try to start such a business as a devotee, this is something else again. This is called prayas. There's that verse, Atyahara Prayashishcha Prajalpaniyamagra. Six things which destroy devotional service. One of them is prayasi or prayas. Prayas means endeavoring for something which is actually material. Mm-hmm. he becomes deviated from the path of devotional service, trying to build up something which he thinks later on I will be able to engage in Krishna's service. So that is not the same. That is not yukta vairagya. Yukta vairagya means it's already there. You see? You don't have to work hard to build. It's already there. So engage in Krishna's service. Well, all I can say is, fortunately, these attitudes are not very widespread. They're limited to certain lower regions of the universe. Well, to be at difference, to be at conflict is generally not a worthwhile situation to be in for very long. Something should change. If the authorities are not going to change, then maybe the devotee should think of moving to a higher planetary system. Well, there's no difference. There are 9 processes of devotional service. So, Shravanam, Kirtanam, hearing and chanting. Smaranam means remembering. Vandanam means praying. So these are 4 of the 9. So any one is as effective as the other for maintaining one's Krishna consciousness. But of course, of all the 9 processes, hearing and chanting are the fundamental processes. That's only logical. Because you can't learn any of the others unless first you hear about them. And you hear from someone who is engaged in kirtanam. He's chanting, you're hearing, and that way you learn how to offer prayers and how to do archana and how to do all the others. So hearing and chanting first, then naturally comes smaranam, remembering. After you've heard and chanted, then you can remember. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter. If you engage in any of these nine, they're as good as the others. It is the Lord's plan that all classes of living entities have the opportunity to come.